Good morning. We'd like to open our September 25th, 2019 post-council to order. I am Wade Carpenter, and I just would like to thank you all for being here this morning. I'd like to excuse Victoria McFarland, Frank Budd, Colonel Mike Rappage, and Captain Steve Winward is filling in for Colonel Rappage. We need to approve the June 4th minutes. Do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
I have a motion for approval from Spence Austin. Do I have a second?
Second
from Bruce Bailey. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, thank you. Our quarterly reports, we'll now hear from Lieutenant Jacqueline Moore and Lieutenant Alex Garcia.
Hello. So for the Post Investigations Bureau, for the quarter of June 1st to August 31st, 2019, we received 69 complaints, opened 26 investigations, conducted 3 administrative hearings. We closed 6 cases with no action. We received 3 voluntary relinquishments. The allegations related to those are sexual conduct on duty. The second is lying under Garrity. The third is providing false information to law enforcement and lying under Garrity. We reviewed 303 basic training applications, 63 dispatcher applications, 22 waiver reactivation applications, and our current caseload is 73 active investigations. Do you have any questions? Thanks.
Morning, Council. This is the quarterly report for our basic training bureau. Covers the same time frame, June 1st to August 31st of 2019. We started 344 SFO on June 17th. They graduated July 26th. They started with 32, 30 of which graduated and completed. 2 were departed. One was a cadet decision to depart, and the other one was an academy injury. 344 LEO started July 29th and will graduate September 26th. They started with 50. 47 are still enrolled in LEO and should graduate tomorrow. 3 were departed for the following reasons. 1 was an agency decision. 1 didn't pass the LEO entrance exam. And there was another policy violation and a criminal act involved. 345 SFO started August 5th. They graduated September 19th. They started SFO with 29. 25 ended up completing. 1 was departed for a cadet decision. Another one was an application rejection once they'd already started. And another one was for policy violations, which included academic dishonesty. And then 1 was departed for failing to pass the certification examination for that class. 346 SFO started September 9th. They will complete SFO on October 18th. They started with 23. We'll have those numbers for you next time. 345 LEO started this Monday, September 23rd. They will be done November 21st. And they are starting the LEO block with 37 cadets. Our upcoming academies, we have 346 LEO that starts October 21st. They will finish up December 19th. There are currently 41 cadets in that class, or enrolled in that class. 347. September 30th, there are the additional class that we added this year. They will start the SFO block on Monday the 30th. They will graduate January 23rd. There's currently 38 enrolled in that class. And then to give you a heads up, as far as the first of the year, our first class of 2020 slated to start January 6th, graduate April 23rd. There are currently already 25 names that are enrolled in that class. As far as in-service training goes, same time frame, June 1st to August 31st of this year. 26 classes were offered, 408 officers obtaining training. Advanced officer was offered, basic dispatch course, EVO course, instructor development, and then the standard intox operator certifications, recertifications, radar, LIDAR, all of those, along with an SFST refresher, for a total of 26 different classes being offered. Any questions as far as the quarterly report goes? Would you like me to move on to
please
the remaining items I'm under?
Academy audits.
Satellite Academy audits. Four audits were conducted this quarter. Bridgerland Technology, Dixie State, Utah State Eastern, and then also we visited with the St. George Dispatch as they are currently running their own post-dispatch class. There were no exceptions in any of those audits. It should be noted that Bridgerland does have a new director, so we've been working closely with him to make sure that he's up to speed and understands what post requires of him. Everything seems to be going good up there. Like I said, no exceptions on any of those audits. Good with that. Any questions on the audits? All right. And as we discussed before, and at the direction of the council, as far as curriculum updates go, rather than doing them yearly, we've now changed to doing them quarterly. So I do have a couple proposals for you guys, nothing big. First proposal is that we've removed career management from the curriculum, from the LEO curriculum. That class, it was determined to be a little bit redundant, as a lot of the stuff that's covered in career management is covered in healthy lifestyles and stress management, as to coping with the job, how to stay focused in the job, and how to not be consumed by the job. So we are requesting to remove that. The second change involves the SFO and the LEO block. The first one is the LEO block. It is identity theft. And the second is the fraudulent documents offered in the SFO block. We are requesting to separate those and put the fraudulent documents in the SFO class instead of having them together in the LEO block, and leave identity theft in the LEO block. If that makes sense, if I didn't just confuse you. So, a lot of that was determined based off of the fraudulent documents class would be important for special functions officers to have, simply because they're doing jobs such as bailiff, constable, those jobs that do require them to be able to identify appropriate documents, fraudulent documents, whereas the identity theft would be more of an LEO type class that law enforcement officers would need to follow through with those types of investigations. I have to call for a vote on that or request the chair.
I have all those in favor. Any opposed? Seeing none. Thank you.
I didn't catch it. Did you remind about the change in how we're approving curriculum from quarter and annual school? Sorry, my mind's 1 million miles away.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We'll now move to disciplinary cases. Prior to the start of this, so I just wanted to remind all of those addressing post-council to limit your comments to 20 minutes. We have a very full agenda today. With that, I'll move to Linda Vitti.
Good morning, Chairman, Vice Chairman, members of the Council. Today, my colleague Ryan Richards will also be addressing the Council on some of these cases. The first case on the calendar is, can you hear me? Is this working? Is Roberto Benvenuto. Is he present? Mr. Benvenuto, are you here, or do you have an attorney? Is there an attorney present for Mr. Benvenuto? I see no one present. Roberto Benvenuto, the sustained allegation is exploitation of a vulnerable adult, a Category A offense. The range is 3 years to revocation, and the guidelines call for revocation as a baseline. Post recommends revocation. He is currently unemployed. He was previously employed for 6 months by the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. There was a criminal case in this matter. On September 13, 2018, he entered a plea of guilty to theft, a Class A misdemeanor. And the facts are as follows. On March 5, 2018, Roberto Benvenuto was investigated by a local police agency for exploitation of a vulnerable adult. The investigation disclosed that on February 28, 2018, Benvenuto stole an iPad from a patient at a local nursing home where he was employed. The patient, whom he cared for, had diminished mental capacity and was unable to speak. Benvenuto admitted to the investigators that he stole the iPad for personal use. On July 17, 2018, Benvenuto was charged in district court with abuse, neglect, or exploitation of a vulnerable adult, a third-degree felony. On September 13, 2018, Benvenuto entered a guilty plea to an amended charge of theft, a Class A misdemeanor, as a part of a plea deal. On May 29, 2019, during a Garrity interview with Post, Benvenuto admitted to stealing the iPad from a patient at the nursing home where he worked. He did not respond to the notice of agency action, and an order of default was entered against him. Any questions from the council?
Make a motion to accept the recommendation.
We have a motion from John Crowley to accept the recommendation. Do I have a second?
Second.
I did. Chief Alan Swanson, second. Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
The second case is Lance Bess. Mr. Bess, are you present with an attorney? Would you like to come up? Lance Bess, the sustained allegation is threatening or use of a dangerous weapon in a fight or quarrel, a Category B offense. The range is 1.5 years to revocation, and the guidelines call for a baseline of 3-year suspension. Post is recommending a 3-year suspension. He was employed at the Unified Police Department for 14 years. He retained employment with UPD but left UPD in 2018. His last date as a peace officer, however, was July 22, 2017. There was a criminal case. There was a jury trial, and he was found guilty of a Class A misdemeanor after a jury trial. His attorneys appealed that conviction. It was reviewed by the Utah Supreme Court, and the Utah Supreme Court confirmed that conviction. Affirmed that conviction. On October 13, 2015, Lance Bess was investigated for threatening or using a dangerous weapon in a fight or quarrel. Bess was duck hunting on the opening day of the duck hunt. Bess's hunting party was set up in weeds that were 2.5 to 3 feet tall. Three hunters were approaching Bess's hunting party at approximately 250 to 300 yards away, and one hunter shot a duck that flew up in the air. The hunter fired 3 shots in the direction of Bess's hunting party. Bess stood up and yelled at the shooter to stop firing the gun. Bess approached the other hunting party with his shotgun in his left hand and his handgun in his right hand. A verbal altercation ensued between Bess and the other hunting party. Bess shouted at the hunting party using an expletive and asking who had shot at him. The individual from the other hunting party said the shooter was a first-time hunter and that it was a mistake. The individual told Bess to put his handgun away multiple times. Bess refused until the other individual said he was going to call the police. At that point, Bess holstered his handgun, identified himself as a police officer, and produced as a peace officer, and produced his badge. Bess did not take any law enforcement action, but told the group to leave the area. Bess returned to his hunting party. The other party left the area and called 911. Law enforcement responded to the hunting area where Bess and the other hunting party had this verbal altercation. Law enforcement explained to Bess that after speaking with the 3 hunters from the other party, it was determined there was no intent to shoot at Bess's hunting party, and it was a mistake. The investigating officer advised Bess he was going to screen Bess's conduct with the county attorney. The case was screened for the county attorney on November 3, 2015. Charges were filed on Bess. On May 5, 2017, Bess was found guilty in a jury trial of threatening with or using a dangerous weapon in a fight or quarrel in violation of Utah Code 7610-506, a Class A misdemeanor. The conviction went through the appeals process. It was reviewed by the Utah Supreme Court, and the conviction was upheld. Mr. Bess waived his right to a hearing and submitted a waiver in this case. Mr. Bess and Mr. Bess's counsel, I'm sorry, I don't know your name. Oh, Mr. Evershed, would you like to address the council?
It is with deep regret and disappointment that I stand before you this day. I strive to live my life with integrity. I apologize to the law enforcement community. I have let you down. My family name and my reputation is tarnished because of what has transpired. There are a lot of things I would like to say and explain, but there's not enough time. The incident for which I stand before you occurred almost 4 years ago. I believe many of us thought the charges would never stick. Even the Box Elder County Sheriff Kevin Potter wrote in an email to his deputy that he didn't believe his actions or my actions constituted anything criminal, or with the very rare circumstance of a juror coming forward stating she didn't actually find me guilty. Nevertheless, we are here, and I truly apologize that you are here and must make a decision about me. I love law enforcement and the community which I serve. I was an officer with Unified Police Department for 14 years before I resigned. In that time, I received numerous awards, including several Division Commander Awards, Chief's Awards, and Officer of the Year. Even when I went home, I was a police officer. I was a police officer 24/7 and tried to live up to that heightened expectation of one. I take gun safety very seriously. I have two friends who were killed in gunfire, Officer Doug Barney and Sergeant Derek Johnson. I have a nephew who was killed by gunfire in Afghanistan. Three of my closest friends lost their canine partners by gunfire, all killed in the line of duty. My law enforcement career started with Rangemaster Nick Roberts instilling in me range and gun safety. I am grateful that he and his firearm instructors have stood behind me during these difficult circumstances. I have learned a lot since that day. I have had a lot of time to reflect upon my actions and what I could have done better. I understand my actions were not perfect, and I am ashamed that my conduct was not professional that day. I hope to be able to convey the fear that I was experiencing that day. I was shot at, directly shot at, not once, but three times. I felt the percussion of each shot. I had BBs cutting through the weeds around me. I thought I was going to be shot, and I was scared for the lives of my family members. After the first shot, my family and I were yelling for the shooting to stop. My family had stood up and were waving their arms at the shooter to stop, and yet two more shots were fired directly at us from 280 feet away. I believed I had to take action. I didn't know why we were being shot at. I didn't know if they were drunk, if they were trying to scare us, or if they recognized me as a police officer. At the time of this incident, a rash of officers had just been ambushed and killed across the nation. I knew we were hours away from getting help, and I believed that if I didn't approach, the result could be serious injury or death. I plead with you, the council, today, to understand that when I approached three armed men who just shot at me, that I never pointed my weapon at them or threatened them with it. I held it behind my leg, as I had been taught to do, even on traffic stops. I didn't leave my shotgun untended in the weeds. It came with me. I didn't even think about it at the time. All I was focused on was three armed men who had just directly shot at me and my family. I reflect back on my training with the Unified Police Department regarding off-duty response. It was drilled into us to act. I acted, and now I'm paying for my actions. As I stated before, I know my actions were not perfect. I have learned from this experience, and I will do better. I love this profession. At a time where officers are hard to come by, I plead with you to allow me the opportunity to prove I can do better. I feel a need to publicly thank all those who have supported me, the Unified Police Department, the Harriman City Police Department, the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office, and most importantly, my family and my lovely wife. I would also like to say thank you to the Utah FOP, the International Union of Police Associations, and the Utah Peace Officer Association for filing an amicus brief on my behalf. I am sorry we are here. I am sorry for the mistakes I made. I am sorry for the hurt I have caused. I thank you for your valuable time and consideration. I understand there are consequences for my actions that day. I ask for this council to heed to the recommendations from POST.
Just a couple things that I wanted to address, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's a privilege to be here with you. The first thing to know is that when it comes to the appellate courts, the case actually is not over yet. His appellate attorney, Paul Cassell, filed a petition for a rehearing. The Supreme Court asked the state to respond. They responded about 3 months ago, and as of yet, we have yet to hear what the Supreme Court is going to do on that. we're hopeful and we're kind of expecting that they are going to rehear the appeal on some of these matters, and it looks like Mr. Cassell believes that with case law that's been developed just in the last couple months that it could be beneficial to my client. I just wanted you to know that issue that's happening. And we also just wanted to point you just to proportionality, which is a very, very important aspect of what you all do. When it comes to cases of threatening in a quarrel with a firearm, or what has typically happened is that there has been very severe consequences. But in those cases, according to the information and the information that you have, those cases were domestic violence related. Those cases were firearms pointing at individuals. Those cases had a background between parties. In this case, it was very, very unique, very, very different than cases of a similar charge. This is more of a threat or an assault. And so we would just ask for a deviation in that realm, understanding the aspects of a self-defense, understanding the uniqueness of this situation in defending a family, understanding that someone was actually being fired at, which often doesn't happen in cases that are before you of this nature. So we would just ask for actually something that is in more of that realm, potentially even a two-year suspension rather than a three-year. He has not been operating as a peace officer for a couple years. He's learned what, and he's grown from this. His family is here to support him today, and we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Any question for Mr. Bess or his counsel? Ms. Beattie, do you have
a question? Just read a few lines into the record just to clarify a point that was raised, and I'm reading from the notice of agency action. Bess said he was scared for his life and didn't know whether to stand up or take cover. Bess said his group yelled at the other hunter to stop shooting. Bess said the shooting was coming from a hunting party he observed earlier, and he believed they knew he was there. Bess said he sat down, thought about the situation, then stood up and started walking over to the hunting party with the shotgun in his left hand. Bess said he felt it was not right and wondered why the hunter was shooting at him. Bess said he asked the other hunting party, "Who the fuck just shot at me?" Bess said his intent was to find out why the hunter shot at him and also identify the shooter. And I know that we then identified the shooter as a teenager who had never been hunting before. I have nothing further.
I have a motion.
I have a motion from Chief Alan Swanson.
Do we move forward with post-recommendation?
We have a motion from Chief Swanson to move forward with post-recommendation.
Do I have a second?
Yes,
please. Major Winburn.
Well, let's go back to when he was last employed, 7/22/17.
Yeah. Okay. So good question. 9/21/18, isn't it?
No.
Okay.
That's when he resigned.
Can we make a minor clarification?
Please.
I'm sorry. Even in the charging documents, it was listed that it was a 12-year-old teenager, but in at court, it was technically a 24-year-old adult male who had been out shooting multiple times and hunting. So the information that was just presented is slightly incorrect, and I'm sorry for that.
Let me ask you that.
I may be wrong on the age. This case is so old, and I got handed it again when I came back. However, I do recall interviewing him, and he said this was the first time that he'd been duck hunting. So it was a new hunter. As far as the age, I thought I recalled that it was at 17. It possibly could have he possibly could have been 24. I'm not 100% sure without digging through this. I apologize.
Thank you.
Clarification on the date. Is Post recommending from 2017 or 2018?
2017. 2017.
From the last date sworn in a sworn position.
Yes.
Okay.
Sheriff Noel.
So Category B, and you recommended 3 years. It could be 1.5, though, is that right? And why did you do 3 years?
The range is 1.5 to revocation, and the baseline is 3 years, which is our recommendation.
So, Sheriff, to answer your question, I saw no mitigators that were strong enough to lead me to believe that I needed to deviate from the baseline.
You said you saw mitigators?
None.
You saw none?
No.
So right now we have a motion.
Okay. That's one more question.
Yes.
What was the outcome, Mr. Bess? Of you were found guilty, and then was there a fine? Was there jail time? What was the outcome of that?
Yes.
There were a lot of things. There was a steep fine. There was 2 days in jail. There was there was anger management. There was community service. There were more things.
You completed all that? Did anger management? Did
yes, there, everything's been completed. And
you did 2 days in jail?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Okay, thanks.
So I still have a motion from Chief Swanson. Do we have a second? I have a second from Major Winward. Any further discussion? Go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? One opposed. Sheriff Noel. Thank you.
Oh, that's yours. No, that's not yours. The next case is Ethan Bigler. Mr. Bigler, are you represented by counsel? Okay, you're welcome to come on up. The sustained allegation against Ethan Bigler is carrying a concealed firearm, a Category E offense. The baseline is a 6-month suspension. The range is a letter of caution to 1.5 years, and Post is recommending a letter of caution. He was employed by the Utah Highway Patrol, but was terminated. There was no criminal case, and in mitigation, he self-reported his conduct, which otherwise would have been undetected, and he reported it through an application addendum. Between the dates of July 16th, 2019 and July 20th, 2019, on one occasion, Ethan Bigler carried a loaded firearm concealed on his person without a valid permit while he was on vacation in Montana. The incident was disclosed to Post by Bigler when he submitted an addendum to his application on July 29th, 2019. During a Garrity interview with Post, Bigler admitted he knew his provisional permit had expired, and he made the decision to carry the firearm concealed on his person while walking around town in Montana. He waived his right to a hearing and submitted a waiver. That's all I have.
Just for the record, Major Winward, you'll need to recuse yourself.
Would you like to address the council?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for your time here. It's unpleasant to be here, but I'm glad I'm here trying to make it right. My actions are unacceptable. I apologize to Post and to Utah Highway Patrol. I expect the better. I did not deliver. It's been some time for self-reflection. I have since then received a valid permit, be in accordance with the law. Being a cadet was a privilege. This is my dream career. I ask that the letter of caution be considered and a second chance. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Bigler? Seeing none, I'll call for the motion.
Okay, the motion to accept.
We've got a motion to accept by Christy Moore. Do I have a second? Second from Sheriff Corey Pulsifer. Call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, thank you.
Okay, the next case on the calendar is David Bingham. Mr. Bingham. Is there a counsel here for Mr. Bingham? I don't see Mr. Bingham, and I don't see no one is responding that they are counsel for Mr. Bingham. The sustained charge against David Bingham was cruelty to animals, a Category C, forgery, a Category A, falsification of government record, Category D. The range is 3 years to revocation. The guidelines call for revocation as a baseline, and POST is recommending revocation. He was employed by the Utah Department of Corrections for 12 years. He resigned. There was a criminal case. The cruelty to animal case was dismissed with prejudice in July 2018. In April 2019, he entered a plea in abeyance to all four counts of forgery, all third-degree felonies. The aggravator in this case is that there are multiple charges. On March 6, 2018, David Bingham was investigated for animal cruelty. The investigation disclosed that on February 1, 2018, Bingham took a dog to the city pound. Bingham did not feed or water the dog, and the dog was found dead on March 6, 2018. On July 2, 2018, the charge of animal cruelty against Bingham was dismissed with prejudice. On September 19, 2018, Bingham was investigated for forgery. The investigation disclosed Bingham had submitted at least two handwritten time cards documented he had worked more hours than he actually had worked. Bingham also forged his lieutenant's name on the handwritten time cards. On April 24, 2019, Bingham entered a plea in abeyance on four counts of forgery. During a Garrity interview with his agency, Bingham admitted to failing to feed and water the animal, which resulted in the death of the animal. Bingham also admitted to documenting more hours on his handwritten time cards than he'd actually worked. He also admitted to forging his lieutenant's name on the handwritten time cards. He did not participate in the investigation, and an order of default was entered against him. Any questions?
Yes, Director Haddon.
I need to recuse myself in this case.
Show for the record, Mike Haddon has recused himself. Any further questions? None. We'll go ahead and call for a motion.
I move to accept.
I have a move to accept from Bruce Bailey and a second from John Crowley. Sorry. Thank you.
Take away.
Appreciate it. My mind went. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Okay, the next case is Brittany Bryan. Brittany Bryan, are you present? Counsel present for Brittany Bryan? I see no response. A sustained allegation against Brittany Bryan was possession of a controlled substance, open container, which is a Category C offense. The range is 9 months to 3.5 years. The baseline is 2 years, and POST recommends 3 years. Brittany Bryan was employed by the Utah Department of Corrections for 3 years and was terminated. The criminal case resulted in a plea of guilty to right-of-way and infraction, a plea of guilty to open container, a Class C, possession of a controlled substance, a Class B, was dismissed without prejudice. And that was in July 2019. The aggravators are that she was involved in a crash with a fatality, and there were multiple offenses. On August 26, 2018, Brittany Bryan was investigated for her involvement in a fatal motor vehicle accident. She made a left-hand turn in front of a motorcyclist who impacted the right rear portion of her vehicle. The motorcyclist sustained fatal injuries. During the accident investigation, an officer detected the odor of an alcoholic beverage emitting from Bryan's breath. Bryan participated in a series of standardized field sobriety tests. The officer did not observe enough clues to suggest Bryan was impaired. During an inventory of Bryan's vehicle, a flask containing alcohol and several empty beer cans were located. Several edible gummies containing THC were also located next to the flask. It was determined that Bryan's vehicle had an illegal window tint. During the Garrity interviews with her department and POST, Bryan admitted the flask belonged to her, but she didn't know who the THC gummies belonged to. On January 10, 2019, Bryan's employment with her department was terminated for department policy violations. On January 29, she entered a plea of guilty to the charge of right-of-way, an infraction, an open container in a vehicle on a highway, Class C, and a possession or use of controlled substance charge was dismissed without prejudice. She waived her right to a hearing before an administrative law judge. Sir.
Any violations determined on the motorcycle driver's part, such as speeding or anything like
that? That was a no.
And she was terminated for other reasons?
She was terminated for policy violations. Yeah, go ahead.
She was terminated for policy violations relating to this incident. Right.
Got a motion from Chief Swanson?
Because there was a death involved, I would make a motion that we go for revocation.
Got a motion from Chief Swanson for revocation?
Have a second from Mike N?
No.
Oh, you're recruited, right.
Spence Austin. Thank you. A second from Spence Austin. Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, thank you.
The next case is Robert Calkins. Mr. Calkins, an attorney for Mr. Calkins. I see no response. Robert Calkins, the charges sustained against Robert Calkins were assault, a Category C, criminal mischief, a Category E, disorderly conduct, a Category F. The range is 9 months to 3.5 years, and the baseline is 2-year suspension. Post is recommending a 3-year suspension. Mr. Calkins was employed by the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office for 5 years. He resigned. There was a criminal case. He pled no contest to disorderly conduct, assault, and intoxication. And the aggravator in this case is that there are multiple offenses. On June 3rd, 2018, Robert Calkins went to a bar with his living girlfriend and consumed alcoholic beverages before returning to their residence. When they arrived at their residence, Calkins and his girlfriend fell asleep. At some point, Calkins and his girlfriend woke up and were engaged in a physical altercation over accusations of Calkins being unfaithful. The police were contacted and responded to the location. The police determined that Calkins was the predominant aggressor and arrested him for domestic violence-related assault, intoxication, and disorderly conduct. On November 20, 2018, Calkins entered a plea of no contest to the disorderly conduct charge, and the two other charges were dismissed. During a Garrity interview with his agency, Calkins admitted he believed there was enough probable cause and physical evidence for him to be arrested for the incident. However, he denied striking his girlfriend. Calkins resigned from his agency on December 20, 2018. On January 18, 2019, Calkins had an argument with his roommate over rent that had not been paid. Calkins returned to the residence and punched a window next to the entrance of the residence, which resulted in damage. On February 22, 2019, Calkins was charged with domestic violence-related criminal mischief, a Class B misdemeanor. On June 12, 2019, the charge against Calkins was dismissed. He did not participate in the post-investigation, and an order of default was entered against him. Questions?
No questions. I'll ask for a motion. Got a motion from Chief Soap. Do I have a second?
Second
from Mike Haddon. Any discussion?
Seeing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none. Thank you.
Good morning. The next case is Mr. Tyrell Curtis. Is Mr. Curtis present or counsel for Mr. Curtis? Mr. Curtis's case is a Category C, the range of which is a 9-month suspension to a 3.5-year suspension. The baseline is a 2-year suspension, and in this case, post recommendation is a 3-year suspension. Mr. Curtis was and is employed with the Juab County Sheriff's Office. There was no criminal case in this matter. I apologize. I have been updated that he resigned on July 25th. There was no criminal case in this matter. The aggravators in this case are the severity of the offenses admitted from the application. The mitigators, there were none. The facts of this case are that on July 23rd of 2018, Tyrell Curtis submitted an application to attend law enforcement training at Post. During the application review process, it was determined Curtis had submitted two previous applications for post training, one on February 20th, 2014, and one on April 20th, 2015. In his second application, Curtis disclosed an incident where he patronized a prostitute in December 2013. The incident was not included on his first application. Curtis's third application included an additional theft, which was not included on his previous two applications. even though the incident took place when he was a juvenile. As part of the review process, Post determined Curtis's first and second applications were approved. However, he did not attend training after his first application was submitted and approved. Post discovered Curtis was not offered employment for the agency which he initially applied as a result of the background process. Post requested the results of a polygraph examination conducted by that agency and discovered Curtis had several other incidents that were not included on his application, which included a hit-and-run traffic accident, possession of child pornography, criminal mischief, falsification or alteration of a government record, the murder of a family dog, and taking protected wildlife out of season. During a Garrity interview with Post, Curtis did not deny the incidents that were included in the polygraph examination, but said they were not included in his application because he had forgotten about them. The Post investigation determined Curtis submitted two Post applications after he admitted the new information during the polygraph examination. The conclusion of the investigation and process was that on July 23, 2019, Mr. Curtis waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for your time. The reason I came today was that I want to stand before you and accept whatever disciplinary actions you deem appropriate. I know I had the option not to be here, but I felt like I should be. The only thing that I would want to argue with, they mentioned that possession of child pornography. I possessed it for a matter of 10 seconds. As soon as I knew what it was deleted. The rest of the stuff, there's no intent for the child pornography, and I didn't possess it for a very long time. No, sir. I recognize if an affirmative defense was that I forgot, that everybody would have forgotten everything. I recognize that it is what it is, and all. And I know that no matter the situation, it's on my shoulders, and I should have sat and thought longer and harder and found a way to remember all the things I've done. And I'm very sorry for failing to have included those items. There's no intent there, but I did absolutely withhold those items from my applications. That's all I had to say.
Any questions for Mr. Calkins?
Curtis, sir.
Chris?
Curtis.
Curtis, sorry.
Curtis, you're up.
Yes, apologize. Sir. No questions? Do I have a motion? I have a motion from Sheriff Curtis.
Not related.
Okay. Do I have a second?
What's the motion?
Accept the recommendation. Motion to accept. What's this? Do I have a second? I have a second from Major Winward. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none? Thank you.
Next case is Jeremy Dunn. The sustained allegation against Jeremy Dunn was aggravated assault, Category A. The range for Category A is 3 years to revocation, and the guidelines baseline is revocation. Post is recommending revocation. Mr. Dunn was employed by the Enoch City Police Department for 7.5 years. His agency did not take action against him. There was a criminal investigation, and he was found not justified, but he was not charged. On June 28, 2018, Jeremy Dunn was investigated by a multi-agency task force for an officer-involved critical incident. The investigation disclosed Dunn responded to a truck stop in a neighboring jurisdiction to assist an officer from that jurisdiction on a vehicle burglary in progress with multiple suspects. The investigation determined one of the suspects, a female, had been involved in vehicle burglaries and had a screwdriver in her hand when Dunn arrived. Dunn fired 3 rounds, striking the female suspect twice in her right leg. The county attorney's office concluded Dunn was not justified in using deadly force, but declined to charge Dunn criminally because, quote, the state would not be able to prove the requisite criminal intent. During a Garrity interview with Post, Dunn admitted to intentionally shooting the female suspect in the knee. When asked why Dunn made the decision to shoot her in the knee, Dunn said he believed if he didn't handle the situation right now, the female suspect was going to die in a suicide by cop incident. Dunn explained that he is a trained EMT and had previously thought about the best way to stop a person with the least potential for causing death. Dunn admitted he disregarded all existing firearms and department training by shooting someone in the knee, but believed it would be the best means to prevent the female suspect from having the potential to harm herself or others. Post determined that Dunn's use of deadly force was not justified, and therefore his actions constituted aggravated assault. On May 2nd and 13, a hearing was held before an administrative law judge. The ALJ subsequently issued findings of fact and conclusions of law stating that Jeremy Dunn violated Utah Code Section 536211 as outlined in the Notice of Agency Action. Mr. Dunn, your attorney, would you like to speak?
Good morning, counsel. My name is Ashley Gregson, and I and Blake Hamilton from my office represent Officer Dunn. I'm just going to make a few remarks and then allow Officer Dunn to speak for himself afterwards. So the question before you here today is whether Officer Dunn committed the crime of aggravated assault. Now, the circumstances he encountered that day were these. He was on duty. He responded to a gas station or truck stop. Where there were numerous civilians, where he knew that when he was responding there was another officer present, but that officer was only partially prepared to handle the situation. He only had a firearm on him. He encountered a suspect who he knew before he got there was armed with an edged weapon, a screwdriver. He knew that that suspect was not responding to commands from the officer who was there at the scene before him. He knew that the suspect had swung the weapon at the previous officer before he got there. He knew that she was not she was not complying with commands and that she was pacing and repeatedly approaching the officers in a threatening manner. He got on the scene. He assessed the situation. He determined he would use his taser to attempt to bring her into compliance and into custody. Unfortunately, the taser did not work. Her clothing was too thick. It didn't make a connection. He wasn't able to bring her into custody using the taser. Immediately after he used the taser, he testified that she made another movement toward him that he saw as an immediate threat. So he fired his firearm at her knee, and she was taken into custody. Officer Dunn later testified explaining the reasons for his actions. He explained that he saw her moving at him after he had attempted to tase her and that tasing had failed. He saw that to be an imminent threat and that he fired his firearm in response to that in an attempt to protect himself and the other people there from her. He also explained that he aimed at her knee not to cause more injury to her, but actually to avoid causing more injury to her. He chose that target, and he does not deny that he chose that target to avoid causing serious injury that may have been caused if he had shot her center mass or at another part of her body. Now, given those facts and his explanation of what he was what he was doing and his explanation of his reasoning for his actions while he was on duty, ask yourself, does that sound like criminal behavior? Does that sound like aggravated assault? No, it doesn't, and that's because it wasn't a crime. It was a law enforcement officer on duty responding to a dangerous and rapidly evolving situation, using what he believed was reasonably lawful force to contain what he perceived as an immediate threat to protect himself and others. He testified that he saw her moving at him after he had attempted to tase her. He saw that as an immediate threat. And he testified that he aimed at her knee to minimize damage and injury to her. That doesn't sound like someone committing aggravated assault. There's simply no evidence of criminal intent here. In fact, the intent that is present here is lawful intent. Officer Dunn's intent was to lawfully use the minimum amount of force necessary to contain that threat. That's not criminal intent. That's what law enforcement officers do every day and are expected to do every day. Now, you may think that maybe that was excessive force. You may think that maybe he should have tried to tase her again. You may think that if he was sued for a 1983 violation, maybe that was a constitutional violation. But excessive force is not aggravated assault. There's more that needs to be shown there. There has to be some criminal intent there, and there just simply wasn't here. He was an on-duty officer responding to a dangerous situation. It would be a true shame if you found today that his good faith efforts to contain the situation and act in a lawful manner was criminal. Especially so when his agency reviewed his actions and determined that his force was reasonable. And the county attorney reviewed this case as well and determined that they couldn't prove that he had criminal intent. There simply was no crime here. Now, like any good officer, Officer Dunn loves his job. He just wants to get back to work being a cop. I know that this experience has been painful for him. I know that he will take this experience and learn from it and use it to become a better officer. But he truly wants to go back to work serving his community, the community that he loves, with the compassion and dedication that he's already shown for that community. And we would ask that you simply allow him to do that in as short of time as possible. Thank you. Yeah.
This is actually for our legal counsel.
Of course.
Would it be out of line to ask that counsel be allowed to see the body cam footage, or are we required to go by the law judge's interpretation?
We're prepared to show it.
So my advice would be not to. Based on the fact that this has already resulted in a two-day hearing before an administrative law judge who issued findings of facts and conclusion of law, my recommendation would be to adhere to the findings of facts and conclusion of law based on what the ALJ, the two-day hearing that has already resulted in this.
Further to that, counsel mentioned that just before he fired his weapon, that there was some aggressive action from her towards him. Is that correct?
That's correct. He testified that he perceived that right before he shot.
According to the document filed by Mr. Hamilton, it said while Officer Dunn was consistent in explaining, he does not have an independent recollection of the female suspect's actions in the moments before he pulled the trigger, which is a counsel.
Well, in his initial interviews after the incident, he admitted that he couldn't recall what exactly caused him to fire. That was because he had not seen... You hadn't seen the body cam yet. And he simply had, and he can explain this probably better than I, a blank spot in his memory right before that. And perhaps you can understand that in a traumatic situation like that. After having the benefit of seeing the body cam and recalling those facts at his hearing before the ALJ, he testified that he did see that movement towards him.
Any further questions for counsel? Mr. Dunn. Oh, one more. Christy Moore.
Clarification. I thought that it was that the agency found that it was not justified, but you said that the agency did find that it was justified?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Vitti. I believe that the county attorney found that it was not justified but didn't take action. That's what she said. And so his agency found it was justified.
The agency said there was no policy violation, I believe is what it stated.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your time. The reason I got into law enforcement was to serve and protect, just like every one of you. While law enforcement is not financially beneficial, it is very rewarding to serve. And to serve others makes you love your community. And when you love your community, you want to protect your community. And you would do anything for your community. I have not been able to be an officer, a law enforcement officer, for 15 months while this has all been pending. This has been a very humbling experience. I saw her as an imminent threat, and I made the best decision I could to minimize the damage to her, and life, the preservation of life, was my priority. But I see that there are things I could have done better and done differently. Moving forward, I would adhere to posts, training, and be more cognizant of every situation I encounter. I humbly ask post counsel to allow me to serve and protect in Utah as law enforcement again. Thank you.
Ms. Feeney, was there any kind of civil lawsuit, and if so, what was the outcome?
I don't know whether there's a civil lawsuit or whether there will be. I can't answer that question.
Yeah, well, one question for Mr. Dunn. Was there any other less lethal options available to you on your belt in your car?
So I had a taser and I had a baton. On my person. First thing, when I arrived, we tried to talk to her. Okay. That didn't work, and I attempted to tase her twice. She had a big coat on. First one, I went center mass. That didn't work, and my second one, I went for upper quadricep just because I knew the other one wouldn't work, and that one also didn't work. I felt like a baton up against the edged weapon, well, obviously, I didn't go by post-teaching where I fired a shot where we're not trained to shoot. But also in post-teaching, you don't take a baton to go fight someone with an edged weapon. So I didn't find that would be a good option.
How many officers were there?
There was two. So I went to back another officer from another agency. Just two of us, and there were three suspects.
Just a point of clarification, I believe it was Chief Swanson that asked. The ALJ said immediately prior to firing his weapon, the female suspect makes no obvious aggressive threat towards him, the other officers, or the civilian. That's what it says on page 10, top of. Please.
Is that a question? Okay.
No, that was just a point of clarification if I understood your question, Chief Swanson. Please. Yeah.
So I'm not sure why the ALJ included that in the way that they did, but my explanation of what Officer Dunn's testimony was is accurate, and that was his testimony. And It may be the ALJ's interpretation of what the body cam shows, but this is his perception of what he perceived as an imminent threat, and that was his description.
Thank you.
Isn't it true that the second officer on the scene also did perceive any threat? He was surprised by the shot?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
If I may just briefly read one paragraph into the record. And I have a 15-page opinion from the ALJ. We had a two-day hearing, and at that two-day hearing, the ALJ considered many witnesses, including experts on both sides, video, physical evidence, photographs. And after reviewing all of those exhibits, looking at those videos, listening to videotaped interviews, listening to the witnesses and the experts, the ALJ stated, in this case, Dunn made a conscious and intentional decision to shoot the female suspect in the knee, causing her bodily injury. His action could be justified as proper use of force by a police officer if he had met the conditions set forth in Section 76.2404 of the Utah Code. However, an objective analysis of the facts surrounding his act show that the threat of harm from the female suspect was not imminent, and that his belief that the use of deadly force was necessary was not reasonable. Since his act is not justified as set forth in 76.2404, he is subject to the application of the criminal statutes related to his act. And there's clear and convincing evidence that Dunn's actions met all the elements of the crime. Are there any further questions?
Sir.
Mike in.
Yeah, on page 3 and 4, since we're not able to watch the video, I'm wondering if the audio is on the video where, in quotes, it says Officer Dunn said he would smoke her if she did not drop the weapon, as well as the follow-up to that, which was, I can take her out like last time. Do you want me to take her out like last time? Is that on the audio on the video?
Yeah, so if you were to watch the video that the judge in this case had the opportunity to watch and to listen to, you would have heard Jeremy Dunn immediately upon arrival point his weapon at the female suspect and order her to drop the knife. And I'm reading from the ALJ's decision. She refused but proceeded to move about within a small area while periodically waving her arms and talking. As he approached closer to the female suspect, Dunn told her he would smoke her if she didn't drop the weapon. She responded that she couldn't die and was noncompliant.
Ms. Beatty, what is the distance from where Officer Dunn is to the approximately?
Ooh.
Do we have that?
I knew that by heart. Give me a second. I have to remember
Thank
that
you.
Number. Remind me. I can't remember right
Maximum.
Now.
Okay.
After the taser deployed.
Okay. What time he shot was 20 years ago.
Shooting?
Yeah, the time of the shooting, I think it was about.
Okay.
Can
I make a clarification? Yeah. Just in response to your clarification, I have read and I understand the ALJ's interpretation, but that's my point, is it is an interpretation. And people view things differently, and that's why I asked if we could see the video, because we may come up with a different interpretation. But I'm also...
Legal advice, you guys are the client, so.
I'll go ahead. Those that would like to see it, show hands. Any opposed? Yeah. Okay, so we don't have a majority, so we'll go ahead and
stay without watching the video.
I need to recuse myself. I was played a small part in the investigation and was actually at the scene of this, so.
For the record, Sheriff Cameron Noel. Okay. We'll go ahead. Any further questions from Ms. Beatty or Mr. Dunn?
I would point out once again that the judge heard 2 days of testimony that included multiple statements, many witnesses, and experts on both sides, and reviewed the physical evidence, including videos and photographs at the scene. Any other questions?
Sir.
have a question. I'm just going to make a motion.
We have a motion from Mike Head.
I would move that we support post-counsel's recommendation for revocation.
We have a motion from Mike Hadden to support post-counsel's recommendation. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Bruce Bailey. Any further discussion?
Make a substitute motion.
John Crowley has a substitute motion.
With no criminal charges and kind of get in the borderline of being a use of force board, is lower down to the 1 degree lower with no criminal charges to just a 4-year suspension.
We have a motion for a 4-year suspension versus a revocation. Do I have
a second?
I got a second from Chief Alan Swanson. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Well, Mike Hadden, for the record, and Dr. Chuckitz, and Bruce Bailey. Did I miss one other? Who else did I miss?
Spence.
Oh, no.
Spence.
Okay, did you? Okay. Thank you. All those in favor? Oh, well, we already got it. Okay, thank you. Motion carries. Thank you.
Okay, the next case is Christopher Edwards. And Mr. Edwards, do you have an attorney? Okay. The sustained charge against Christopher Edwards was willful falsification to obtain certification. The range was 9 months to 3.5 years. The guidelines called for a 2-year suspension. I'm sorry, the baseline is a 2-year suspension. Post recommends a 2-year suspension. Mr. Edwards was not in law enforcement. He retired after 23 years. There was no criminal case, and the mitigator in this case is the period of time since the incident occurred. On May 21, 1991, Christopher Edwards submitted an application to obtain post-certification. On April 16, 2019, after retiring in July of 2016, Edwards wanted to reactivate his certification and submitted a second application to post. During the review process, the two applications were compared to one another. Edwards disclosed 5 arrests in his 2019 post application, 3 traffic and 2 criminal. The 5 arrests occurred within 6 years of Edwards' 1991 application, but Edwards did not disclose any of the 5 arrests in the criminal history portion of his 1991 application when it was asked. During the post-Garrity interview, Edwards was asked why he did not disclose the information in his 1991 application, and he responded by saying he didn't know why. He waived his right to a hearing. Questions? Mr. Edwards. Would you like to address?
Thank you for your time. Honestly, I do not know why my application from 1991 did not include the rest offenses. I can offer no defense. It's 28 years ago. I don't know where exactly my head was at that time when I submitted my application to post. I could speculate dozens of ways of why that would have happened, and I've spent a lot of time in the last few months trying to figure that out. Particularly, you know, the one thing that does come to mind was that the post application would have been the first comprehensive application that I had applied for at that time. I was about 21 years old. I'd applied various jobs, worked various jobs, and there were always, you know, 1-page, 2-page applications, handwritten. You turn it in 15 minutes later or whatever. The post application was pages and pages long, which required a lot of in-depth research to completely, not research per se, but filling out the information. So going and finding all that information was time-consuming. You know, the only one thing that I can think of is that, you know, in my haste to get the application turned in and submitted, I didn't fully completely read the application. Not that I didn't read it. I submitted it without fully reviewing. I have no excuse for it. Recently I've been offered a position to return to law enforcement by the Weber County Sheriff's Office. They have offered me a conditional offer to be employed by them. The only thing that's limiting me right now is post-certification. And until I can get this cleared up, I can't return to law enforcement. I had a 21-year career with the Ogden Police Department. I was a reserve officer with them for 3 years prior. In my time with the police department, I had no incidents or disciplinary action involving anything dishonest or falsification of any documentation. My supervisors at the time appreciated my report writing abilities, and they frequently told me that I was a pretty good report writer with the police department, accurate and detailed, and took care of what needed to be taken care of on the reports. I asked that simply that I be allowed to return to law enforcement and continue the work that I had done previously and continue that for my community up in Weber County. That's all I have.
Yes.
If I could say something, there is no stat. I want to remind the council there's no statute limitations on administrative process. This happened a long time ago. We're bringing it before you as a matter of consistency, and that's why it's being presented to the council.
I have a question for one of the investigators. The stuff that was not put in the application, I mean, I know it's been 30 years ago. Would that have precluded him getting to the academy had he disclosed it at the time?
We don't have record of whether it would have or not.
In today's?
Would
it have been?
Today's, remember the time from the year?
Yeah, it would have been a year wait. So.
Yeah.
But we don't have, we weren't able to find any statutes back then that we could have applied to it to find out.
Disclosed all this stuff in the application that had happened 4 or 5 years prior. Him applying, that wouldn't have precluded him getting into it.
No, our maximum wait time right now is 4 years or you're ineligible. So,
but to give deference to the officer we're applying, we tried to apply that standard in which he had made application. We could not determine what it was back then.
I can also say something. As I was filling out my application for my 1991 application, or the application this year, sorry, I recall saying, as I was doing it, thinking to myself, you know, the application is just as more detailed than it was back then. How the heck could I even, you know, it would have, I was appalled. I was surprised at the depth of detail, and I think to myself, how could I have done that, filled that out in 1991? That was, you know, difficult to do, just getting all the information now in today's digital age. After I had submitted my application and prior to the investigation, I was requested by Post to obtain the detailed information of those incidents, to go to the courts and to the law enforcement agencies for the two misdemeanor offenses, to either gather the information of the arrest and the court findings. And I went through and I produced those and submitted them into two posts for the application to be accurate and detailed as possible. When I learned that the 1991 application did not have that, I was shocked and appalled, especially after, you know, knowing what I had gone through for the application this year to obtain recertification. I was shocked that I did not include that in there. So, you know, I'd like to offer that up as well.
Chief Swanson.
I realize there's no statute of limitations, as mentioned, but it was almost 30 years ago, so I would make a motion for a letter of counsel.
Second. Got a motion for a letter of caution and a second from Sheriff Noel.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, the next case is Abindi Gray. Abindi Gray, counsel for Abindi Gray. Say it again. Abinadi Gray. The sustained charge is falsification or alteration of a government record, a Category D, and the record should reflect no one has responded when I called Abinadi Gray's name or counsel's name. This is a Category D, so the guidelines baseline, I'm sorry, the range is 3 months to 2.5 years, and the baseline is 1 year. Post is recommending 1 year. Mr. Gray served with the Uinta County Sheriff's Office for 4.5 years and then resigned. No criminal charges were filed. On September 8, 2017, Mr. Gray was investigated for distribution of Schedule 3 or Schedule 4 controlled substance and unlawful or unprofessional conduct. On September 5, 2017, he was conducting medical rounds at the Uinta County Jail. He was assigned and authorized to conduct medical rounds at the jail. He was a certified EMT and observed an inmate that appeared to be going through withdrawals from narcotics. The inmate had been administered a half a strip of Suboxone earlier in the day. Gray administered an additional half a strip of Suboxone. Am I saying that correctly? Suboxone to the inmate, but did not document it in the inmate's medical administration record. Gray resigned from the department in January 20th, 2018. Criminal charges were screened against Gray with the county attorney, but the county attorney declined to file charges. On January 10th, 2019, during a post-Garrity interview, Gray admitted to administering an additional half a strip of Suboxone to an inmate and not documenting it on the inmate's medical administration record. Gray admitted to knowing he was required to document any medication he administers to an inmate. Gray said he knew if he would have documented giving the inmate Suboxone, he would have been terminated, but he intentionally removed the Suboxone from the medical card in front of the camera. Post-investigators determined that the Uinta County Jail policy that a medical administration record is a government record, and Gray falsified the record by not documenting the medication he administered to the inmate. Investigators also determined Gray was authorized to conduct medical rounds and administer the medication. He failed to respond to a notice of agency action, and a default was entered against him. Questions?
Clarification?
Yes,
As the request is for a one-year suspension, he resigned in January of 2018. That would have already been served at this point. Is that accurate?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question.
So he resigned in January of 2018, and the post council is recommending a year suspension. So that would, if we approved that one-year suspension, that would have already been served at this point.
Am I correct? Is that correct? Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Do we have a motion?
Make a motion to follow the post council recommendation for 1 year suspension.
We have a motion from Chief Soap to accept the 1 year recommendation from post council, and a second from Mike Haddon. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, we'll move on. Thank you.
Next case is Jake Hardy. I believe Mr. Hardy and his counsel are present. The substantiated allegation was willfully falsifying any information to obtain certification. This is a Category C. The range is a 9-month suspension to a 3.5-year suspension. The guidelines and baseline is a 2-year suspension, and the post recommendation is a 2-year suspension. At the time, Mr. Hardy was employed with the Utah Valley University Police. He resigned on May 12th of 2019. There was no criminal case. The aggravating factors are the multiple false submissions, and there were no mitigators. The facts are that on or about April 5th, 2011, Jake Hardy submitted a post application to attend law enforcement officer training at a satellite police academy. The application was denied based upon the drug use information he provided. Hardy's waiting period for his previous drug use would have expired January 1st, 2013. On or about October 22, 2012, Hardy submitted a post-application to attend dispatcher training. Hardy failed to disclose any of his previous drug use except his marijuana use in high school. The discrepancy between the two applications was not discovered. Hardy's application was approved, and he was permitted to attend training. On or about July 7, 2016, Hardy submitted a post-application to attend law enforcement officer training at Post. Hardy disclosed the drug use as listed on his first post application, and since he was beyond the waiting period, he was permitted to continue training. During a Garrity interview with Post, Hardy said he thought he listed the information and did not know why it was not in his 2012 dispatcher application. Hardy said he never had an issue with the disclosure of his previous drug use and did not intentionally leave the information off the second application. Post also determined Hardy had not disclosed all of the previous traffic conviction on his most recent Post application. During the Garrity interview, Hardy said he believed he only disclosed what was on his driver's license history. The outcome of the post process was that on August 20th of 2019, Mr. Hardy waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the Notice of Agency Act.
I'm going to start off with a letter from a former chief of mine. I had the pleasure to work with Jake Hardy while he served in several capacities at the police department at Utah Valley University, where I was serving as chief of police. I initially hired him as a dispatcher in 2008, and he was promoted to dispatch supervisor in 2014 due to his excellent performance as a dispatcher. During his service as a dispatch supervisor, he served very well and was reliable and trained several new dispatchers in their duties. In August 2016, he completed the Law Enforcement Academy and was then hired again as a police officer at the Utah Valley University Police Department. Again, he was very reliable in his duties, which he learned quickly and performed them very well. During my service at the Utah Valley University Police Department, I appreciated the service and dedication of Jake Hardy and his assignments. I do not recall having any problems caused by his conduct or service. From Chief John Brewer, retired. I've been passionate about law enforcement since I joined in 2008. I thoroughly enjoyed and I love being a volunteer, a dispatcher, and ultimately a police officer. I enjoyed the ability to help those in need, find those who are lost, and protect those who could not protect themselves. This was a huge oversight on my part. I've always been open with my prior drug use and incidents involving the traffic citations, both within my professional and personal lives, some of which took place while employed in law enforcement, and my superiors were notified and aware. This oversight quickly became a large and recognized mistake on my part when I received the Post letter in March of 2018. After my last meeting with Post, and in May of this year, I took it upon myself to quit working for the UVU Police Department in all capacities. This has been a humbling experience in where I've learned major life lessons that I apply in my daily life, and ultimately, this will be a lesson learned that will carve out a better future for me in the long run, as a person, as a father, as a son, and hopefully as a law enforcement officer after I have served my time. I do not wish this to reflect poorly on my brothers and my sisters, those who have left us, and those who are still holding up the badge. I do not wish this to reflect poorly on my family or my prior police agencies for those I have served. These actions are of my own doing, and I should reflect solely as such. I understand every action has a reaction, and every cause has an effect. I'm here before you today to reap the consequential reaction and effect as this post council sees fit.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Hardy?
What capacity were you working in law enforcement in 2008?
Dispatcher part-time.
Any further questions? That will, counsel, go ahead.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, in preparation of this, I was able to review cases that have gone back on similar types of cases and similar type of allegations. My client understands, and I understand that you have a job to do, and when it comes specifically to these allegations, that you have your recommendations and you typically follow those recommendations. We understand that. What we would just ask is an understanding that he's a good man. He made a mistake. He's never been afraid to talk about his drug use. He's overcome his drug use. He's been open and honest about that to people around him, and he's helped people understand how to become better in their lives. This is something that's been a very good learning experience for Jake. He looks forward to, again, being a peace officer, again, being involved in law enforcement. He understands that there is a recommendation here. We would ask for more leniency, of course, but he understands that he has something to learn from this, and he's going to move on from it, and we appreciate your time.
We have a motion.
I'd like to make a motion to reduce it to a 1 year.
I have a motion from Sheriff Holtzper to reduce to a 1 year suspension.
I'll second it.
I have a second from John Crowley. Any further discussion? Hearing none, call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
The next case is Joshua Cade Hardman. If you'd like to come up, sir. And are you represented? The sustained charge against Joshua Hardman is impersonation of an officer, a Category D offense. The range is 3 months to 2.5 years. The guidelines baseline is 1 year suspension, and POST is recommending 1 year suspension. Mr. Hardman is currently unemployed. He was previously employed as a police officer by the Santa Clara Ivins Police Department, what was separated prior to this incident. He served with that department for 3 years. On February 21st, 2019, Joshua Cade Hardman entered a local tow company to retrieve a trailer and two four-wheelers that had been towed the previous day. Hardman told employees of the tow company he was a peace officer for a local department and was on a task force. Hardman was able to retrieve his trailer and four-wheelers at a discounted price. On February 23rd, 2019, the case was screened with the county attorney and charges were filed on Hardman for impersonation of a peace officer. Hardman's next scheduled court appearance is October 9th. So another week or so, 2019. On March 27th, 2019, during a Garrity interview with Post, Hardman admitted he told the employees of the local towing company that he was an officer with a local department and was on a task force. He failed to respond to a notice of agency action, so a default judgment was entered against him, but he is here today. And if you'd like to address the council, sir, you're welcome to.
Good morning, council. Thank you for your time. I'm not denying the allegations. I did tell him that I was a police officer while I was on the phone with the tow company trying to find out where my stuff was at. He was the owner of the tow yard, was saying that I needed to bring all sorts of documentation, proof of ownership, all that stuff. I told him I had the titles. I had just recently purchased the trailer, so the trailer was not registered in my name. He mentioned that he thought everything was stolen. I told him, I understand how this looks. I understand your process. I understand what I need to do because I am a police officer. I believe I am a police officer. I was currently looking. I had just gotten out of backgrounds with Washington City. I had a test with the county that weekend. My intent was not to deceive them or to try to better myself. My intent was to let him know I understand the process. I did ask where I was working, and I told him I worked for Santa Clara Ivins, which I had resigned, so I was not currently working. I asked him how much it was going to cost me to get my stuff out. He told me if I come down right now, he would knock $200 off. So I came right down. That was the last that was mentioned. It was mentioned on the phone, not at the place of business. When I arrived there, they did ask, you work for, or are you with the task force? And I said yes. So again, I'm not denying the allegations, but I'm begging for mercy on my certification. This is the only thing that makes sense to me. I've done every job out there, from construction to driving trucks to retail to mechanics to working in warehouses. This is the only thing that I'm passionate about. This is the only thing that I want to do with my life. I do apologize for the shame that it's brought to the law enforcement community. Just begging for mercy for my certification. Thank you.
Thank you.
Need to recuse.
The Sheriff Pulsifer will recuse himself. Any questions, Mr. Hardman?
convicted of this? Were you convicted of?
No, sir. My court date is not set until October 23rd. I haven't gone to court yet.
Any further questions? Seeing none, I'll call for the motion. I have the motion. I have a motion from Major Winhart to accept post recommendation. Got a second? Got a second from Spence Austin. Any further discussion? Seeing none, go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
Okay, the next case is Andrew Hatcher. Mr. Hatcher, anyone representing Mr. Hatcher? I see no response. The sustained allegation against Andrew Hatcher is driving under the influence of alcohol, a Category D offense. The range is 3 months to 2.5 years suspension. The guidelines baseline is 1 year suspension, and Post recommends a 2 year suspension. Mr. Hatcher is currently unemployed. He was employed for 1 year. He was charged criminally with DUI, and the aggravator is that it was an accident, and he had twice the legal limit of alcohol in his blood. On or about February 2, 2019, Andrew Hatcher was operating a vehicle when he backed into a tree. A police officer observed the collision take place and initiated a traffic stop. And I should say that he's a dispatcher. I failed to mention that. A police officer observed the collision take place and initiated a traffic stop. The officer determined Hatcher was under the influence of alcohol and placed him under arrest. Hatcher's blood alcohol content was measured to be 0.17. He is an unemployed post-certified dispatcher and did not participate in the subsequent post-investigation. An order of default was entered against him. Questions?
Seeing no questions, I'll call for the motion.
Recommendation.
Thank you, John Crowley. Second. Accept. Second from Bruce Bailey. Any discussion? Seeing none, call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. We'll go ahead and be in recess for 20 minutes. Is that correct? I have a motion for recess. Sheriff Noel. I'd like to call post counsel back into session. It is 12:01 on September 25th. 2019. Our next case is Bradley Johnson. Ms. Beattie?
Got one or two in the hallway still.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. For the record, we do have a quorum.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Johnson is present, and you are not represented by counsel. The sustained charge against Bradley Johnson was reckless endangerment, a Category A offense. The range is 3 years to suspension. The guidelines baseline is revocation, and Post recommends revocation. Mr. Johnson was employed by the Utah Department of Corrections until he was terminated. He worked there for 3 years. In his criminal case, he entered a plea in abeyance to reckless driving and unlawful use of a vehicle. On or about July 15, 2018, Bradley Johnson was operating a golf cart at the correctional facility where he was assigned when he and another officer, and I might add you heard the other case at the last post-council, the other officer's case, the last post-council, witnessed an inmate walking between two buildings during a time when movement was not typical. The other officer stepped on the accelerator of the golf cart, and Johnson steered toward the inmate from approximately 50 feet away in a joking manner. As Johnson neared the inmate, he stepped on the brakes but was not able to come to a complete stop before striking the inmate with the golf cart. A criminal investigation determined Johnson's conduct was reckless, and charges were filed against him for reckless endangerment. On December 12, 2018, the reckless endangerment charge was dismissed. However, Johnson was charged with reckless driving, a Class B misdemeanor, and unlawful motor vehicle use on a public or private roadway, a Class C misdemeanor, in the local justice court. On March 4, 2019, Johnson entered a plea in abeyance to both charges. During the Garrity interviews with this agency and Post, Johnson admitted his conduct was unprofessional and endangered the safety of an inmate, but he said he did not intentionally hit the inmate and that it was an accident. There was a hearing held before an administrative law judge, and at the conclusion of the hearing, the ALJ determined that the charge of, or the allegation of reckless endangerment should be sustained. Question? No, sir, would you like to address the council?
Got it. Yes. For the record, Director Haddon will recuse himself.
Thank you for your time today. I'll keep this short. Really no excuse for my action that morning. We were joking around, being stupid, doing things we shouldn't have been doing. I regret my actions that day. I tried to stop. As she's stated, I'm unable to stop in time. I regret my actions, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none.
Ms. Beattie. Can I ask the attorney a question?
Sure.
We listen to the other person.
Mm-hmm.
Can we get a refresher on what we did with that other individual, please?
We're looking it up right
now. Okay.
We're looking it up.
What was the name of the...
Sam Thomas. Samuel Thomas.
Mr. Johnson, you're the driver, is that correct?
I was.
Okay.
I believe it was a revocation, am I correct? Yes, it was a revocation, okay.
Any questions for Ms. Beattie? Do I have a motion?
Make a motion to accept Post recommendation.
I have a motion to accept Post recommendation by Sheriff Pulsifer. Do I have a second?
Second
from Spencer Austin. Any discussion? Hearing none, I will call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None opposed. Thank you.
Brian Lentz. Brian Lentz, an attorney representing Brian Lentz. I see no response. The allegation sustained against Brian Lentz was willfully falsifying any information to obtain certification of Category C. The range is 9 months to 3.5 years. The guidelines baseline is 2 years suspension, and Post recommends 3.5 years. Mr. Lentz had 3.5 years of service with the Utah Department of Corrections before he resigned. He was criminally charged. He pled guilty to the amended charge of attempted forcible sexual abuse, a third-degree felony, in July of 2019. The aggravator in this case is that he was convicted of a felony. On or about December 18, 2013, Brian Lentz completed a post application to attend the Utah Department of Corrections Academy. On the application, Lentz marked no on a question which asked if he had ever been convicted of, arrested for, or involved in a crime of unlawful sexual misconduct. Lentz completed the academy and became an SFO and BCO certified. On or about September 22, 2017, during a pre-employment examination, Lentz disclosed he had forcibly performed oral sex on his ex-girlfriend on one occasion in 2010. After the disclosure, the incident was criminally investigated, and Lentz was charged with forcible sodomy, a first-degree felony. On July 23, 2019, Lentz entered a guilty plea to the amended charge of attempted forcible sexual abuse, a third-degree felony. During a Garrity interview with Post, Lentz admitted he, quote, pushed the envelope with his ex-girlfriend on the night the incident occurred, and said he realized he should have disclosed the incident on his post application. He submitted a waiver. He waived his right to an administrative law judge hearing. Questions?
Yes.
If he had put this on his application, would he have been accepted to post?
I'll let Director Stevens say it.
Sorry.
If he had put that on his application, would he have been accepted into post?
No.
Then I would make a motion that we go for revocation.
Sure. You got him? Yes. Mr. Hatton, recuse myself. Yes. Mr. Hatton has recused himself.
And I have a motion from Chief Swanson for revocation. Do we have a second?
A second from Spence Austin. Do we have any discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
The next case is Lauren Locke. The sustained allegation is a BCI violation. The range is a letter of caution to 1.5 years. Baseline is 6 months, and post recommends a letter of caution. Lauren Locke was employed by the Provo City Police Department. She was suspended for 1 day without pay. She resigned from that department on May 10, 2018, but currently works for Pleasant Grove PD. She had been with Provo for 3 years. The mitigator in this case is she didn't disseminate the information she got from BCI. Lauren Locke was investigated for a BCI violation. The investigation disclosed Locke unlawfully accessed protected information regarding her ex-fiancé on May 3, 2017, and on June 21, 2017. On July 18, 2017, during a Garrity interview with her department, she said she didn't remember why she conducted a search of her ex-fiancé's information. She told investigators she did not remember accessing the protected information regarding her ex-fiancé, but she must have done it. On April 22, 2019, during a post-Garrity interview, Locke did not remember accessing protected information regarding her ex-fiancé and said she did not ask anyone to access the protected information regarding her ex-fiancé, and the ex-fiancé did not ask Locke to access the protected information, protected records. On July 8, 2019, she waived her right to a hearing and stipulated to the facts. Any questions?
So just so I'm clear, she's saying that she didn't access it, nor was she asked to access it.
She says she doesn't remember.
Okay. All right.
But then she said she must have done it because because we have records.
Any questions for Ms. Beatty? Seeing none, I'll call for a motion.
This motion to accept.
Motion to accept. Second from John Crowley.
I'd like
discussion. Some discussion, please.
Each one of these BCI violations, we look at each one of them and make a decision on them, and they're all different, the circumstances. She clearly knew what she was doing, and then she lied about it. I think we should go. There's a lot that we do letter of cautions on. I understand that, but this is not one. I think we should go a level up on it.
Is that a motion?
It is a motion to whatever the next level is. What is it, 6 months?
Baseline 6 months. The next one would be 3 months.
Your motion was for just for clarification?
Was that for clarification or a motion?
Baseline six.
Go baseline or
what? The next one's 3 months off this
one. Next step.
Yeah. Well, what do I have to do? Because there's already been two motions. So.
Well, this is discussion, so you make a substitute motion.
So I want to make a substitute motion and move it to the next level up.
Which I believe is 3 months, is that correct?
3 months?
Yes.
I have a substitute motion
from Sheriff Noel for 3 month suspension. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second from Bruce Bailey. Do I have further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none. Thank you, Ms.
Speaker. Next case is Jared Loftus. Mr. Loftus, are you here? Say that one more time.
There's a break in service, so she resigned May 10th of 18. And was rehired December 1st of 18. There needs to be some clarification as to that 3 months.
Are you talking to Lauren Locke of the last one?
Correct. Yes.
So she's already served that? Is what?
I'm not saying that she's already served it. I'm just saying that you've got discrepancies in hire dates and all of that.
Now, historically, in this situation, we had one other situation years ago.
I mean, like way back, where credit, well, the council just ignored the fact that there was a break and the fact that she got rehired. So it's up to the council how they look at this, but she resigned from the department and she got hired again. So she is working as an officer right now. Usually you give credit when they're on administrative leave and not functioning as a peace officer. It's up to you how you apply. If you want to count that break in service, that is your prerogative as a counselor.
And she was suspended for 1 day without pay.
Council's desire on that?
Motion for credit served.
The motion from Chief Swanson for time served or credit served.
Second.
We've got a second with Chief Soap. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none. Thank you.
So we got.
Okay, we're on Jared Loftus, who is not here apparently. And no one's representing Jared Loftus. The sustained allegations against Jared Loftus are threats of violence, a Category B, impersonation of a peace officer, a Category C, providing false or misleading information, a Category D. The range is 1.5 to revocation. The baseline is 3 years, and Post is recommending revocation. Mr. Loftus is unemployed. He was charged criminally, and he pled guilty to providing false or misleading statements, a Class A misdemeanor that was amended to a Class B misdemeanor, and pled guilty to threat of violence, a Class B misdemeanor. In aggravation, there are multiple charges, and he was, at the time of this act, was on post suspension, as some of you may recall. The suspension ended on March 21st, 2019. He had 6 years of service with his department prior to that. On July 15, 2018, Jared Loftus was investigated for threats of violence, impersonation of a peace officer, and obstruction of justice. Loftus was walking on a trail with a group of friends when he engaged in an argument with two individuals after he scared a group of teenagers who were walking on the trail. During the argument, Loftus told the two individuals that he was a peace officer and they needed to show him their green cards. Loftus then told the individuals he was going to bury them in the woods and reached toward the small of his back, making the individuals think he had a firearm. The individuals contacted dispatch, and Loftus fled the scene on foot. Loftus admitted to asking the individuals about their legal status, but stated he only identified himself as an ex-correctional officer in an attempt to scare them. He denied threatening the individuals. On September 9, 2018, the case was screened with the county attorney, and charges were filed on Loftus. On April 30, 2019, Loftus entered a plea of guilty to the charge of providing false and misleading statements under Utah Code 768504.5, a Class A misdemeanor, and to threat of violence under Utah Code 765107, a Class B misdemeanor. The impersonation of a peace officer charge was dismissed with prejudice. He did not participate in the post-investigation, and an order of default was entered against him. Questions?
Seeing no questions, I'll ask for the vote.
I make a motion to accept.
You have a motion to accept?
Second.
And a second by Cadden. The motion was Kristen Warner. I didn't get that. And a second by Cadden. Call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
Is Javin Lowell here? Lowell here? Oh, okay, great. Come on up. Is it Lowell or Lowell? Lowell, okay. The sustained allegation against Mr. Lowell is engaging in sexual conduct on duty, a Category B offense. The range is 1.5 years to revocation. The guidelines baseline is 3 years, and Post is recommending 3.5 years. Mr. Lowell was employed by the Department of Corrections for 3 years and was terminated. He appeared in court on August 6, 2019 in criminal charges filed in this case and pled no contest. The aggravator in this case is that there were multiple offenses. On May 7th, 2019, Javon Lowell was working in a control room at the correctional facility where he was employed when he was observed by a supervisor masturbating. The supervisor reported the incident to his chain of command, and an investigation was initiated. Criminal charges for lewdness were filed against Lowell on June 29, 2019, and he was terminated from his agency on July 2, 2019. During Garrity interviews with his agency and Post, Lowell admitted he was masturbating in the control room while watching pornographic material on his personal phone. He says he does not know why he masturbated at work and said the details were hazy. He said he had recently started taking a full dose of medication prescribed by his doctor, and the possible side effects included behavior changes. Lowell failed to respond to a notice of agency action. An order of default was entered against him, but he is present here. And, sir, if you'd like to address the council, you are.
First, I just want to apologize for my actions. I did start taking medicine to help lose weight, and possible side effects were affected memory, mood, and behavior changes. Since that happened, I have been fully cooperated with every agency. I've tried to help as much as I can. I've even, when I pled no contest, it was for a plea of abeyance, which gave me a $700 fine and three days of community service, which I've already worked, and I have $500 left of the $700. I'm coming today to ask for a little lenience, and not necessarily to no punishment, but not necessarily the full 3 years. That's all I can say. Ask.
Just for clarification, it's 3.5 years. If you have any questions referencing medical, we will need to go into closed session, which we can do.
Mr. Haddon will recuse himself.
I'd like to go into closed session.
I have a motion from Dr. Jacobs to go into closed session. This time, anyone who is not on a closed count.
Oh, go ahead. We have to have a vote.
Do you have a vote?
Second motion.
Do you have a second? I've got a second from... Sheriff Pulsa for those in favor.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and go into closed session.
We'd like to call post-council back to session. It is 12:28 on September 25th. And we had a motion from John Crowley and a second from Bruce Bailey to hear from Mr. Lowe. Please. I had a question for you.
Okay.
Question: whether you answer, I would like to know what medicine you were taking.
I think it was called topamate. It's prescribed primarily for seizures and epilepsy, but they're starting to prescribe it for weight loss as well with fentanyl, I do believe. Fentanyl or something like that.
Topamax.
Sorry. Topamax.
Yeah, they're
two different pills. Fentanyl is the weight loss thing, and then with this one, one of the side effects is it helps you not eat as much and everything.
Do we have a clarification on the medication? Did you say fentanyl? Because I think there was a misclarification.
Well, he said fentanyl at first. That's what I'm trying to clarify. Is it a fentanyl derivative?
No, it's not.
Okay.
I think the name is something different, actually.
To? The one is Topamax is the drug that I'm referring to.
Should I read it?
So we have a letter from the University of Utah from a doctor, and it has the exact name of the medication. If you'd like me to read that into the record, that'd be helpful.
Sure.
Yeah. Yes, please. So it says he was placed on a medication called T as in Timothy, O, P as in Peter, A, M as in Mary, A, X. Do you have a copy of this letter? No?
I don't believe so.
Would you like me to read what the doctor said the side effects or adverse effects of the medication can be, or would you not like that read into the record? You do have that letter.
It's quoted. It's
okay.
Okay. Prefer not to. Let's go ahead and any questions on the side effects of the medication? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and continue with questioning. Do we have a question?
I had a question. Did you have a discussion with your doctor telling you that this could have an effect with you before you were prescribed it?
He said that there were some slight side effects, that keep an eye on it, and if I had any adverse reactions, to tell him about it.
Any of that to your supervisor, that it could affect your work performance?
No, I did not.
Any further questions? Ms. Beatty, do you have anything else? With that, we'll go ahead and call for a motion.
I have a motion to accept post recommendations from Steve Winward. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Dr. Chekitz. Any further discussion? Seeing none, go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none opposed?
Thank you. I was going to let you, you stated that it was a 3-year suspension. It's actually the recommendation is a 3.5-year
okay.
suspension, just so you're clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next case is Jonathan Magnum.
The substantiated allegation was theft by extortion, a Category A. The range is 3-year suspension to revocation. The baseline is revocation, and the post-recommendation is revocation. At the time, Mr. Magnum was employed by the South Jordan Police Department. At the time he was employed by the South Jordan Police Department, he resigned from that agency on September 23rd of 2017. There was a criminal case in which it ultimately resolved by him entering a plea to be held in abeyance to the charge of theft by extortion, which had been amended to be a Class A misdemeanor. There were no aggravators and no mitigating factors. The facts are that between the dates of April 28th of 2017 and May 18th of 2017, Mangum sent text messages to his wife threatening to show a picture of her using an illegal substance to the Division of Child and Family Services in an attempt to stop his wife from obtaining a portion of his retirement pension during arbitration. Mangum's now ex-wife was afraid of Mangum's threats, therefore she did not attempt to obtain a portion of his retirement pension. Mangum did not participate in the criminal investigation. On November 17th, 2017, the case was screened with the district attorney, and Mangum was charged with theft by extortion, a second-degree felony. On February 9th, 2018, Mangum entered a plea to be held in abeyance to an amended charge of theft by extortion, as provided by Utah Code Annotated 766-406, a Class A misdemeanor. Mr. Mangum did not participate in the post-investigation. The conclusion of the post process was that Officer Mangum failed to respond to the notice of agency action on August 7th, 2019. An order of default was signed by the administrative law judge and mailed to Officer Mangum. I failed at the beginning to call for him, but Mr. Mangum, I don't believe is present nor is counsel.
Mr. Mangum or counsel, see no one rising. Also, for the record, Spence Austin will recuse himself as the AG's office took part in this investigation. Motion?
Motion that we move forward with post-recommendation for revocation.
I have a motion from Chief Swanson to accept a post-recommendation and a second from Mike Haddon. Do we have any discussion? Hearing none, let's call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, thank you.
Okay, the next case is Mr. Oliveo. Did I say that correctly? I'm not going down that road. The sustained charge against Mr. Oliveo is possession of dangerous weapons, firearms, or explosives in airport secure areas, a Category F offense. The range is a letter of caution to 1 year. baseline is 3 months, and the recommendation is a letter of caution. Mr. Oliveo was is employed by the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. The action his agency took was a verbal warning. He's had 11 years of service with the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office as an SFO. He pled guilty in abeyance on July 2nd to an infraction. In mitigation, he worked part-time for Delta Airlines, and he self-reported the offense to Post and his administration. On May 8, 2019, Mr. Oliveo was investigated for possessing a firearm at the airport in a secure area. He went to the airport to work a shift for his part-time employer, Delta. Mr. Oliveo forgot he had placed a handgun in his part-time employer work bag. Once he arrived at work, he set the bag on the security screening belt. A security employee observed the gun in the work bag and contacted the local police. The local police agency screened charges with the city attorney, and a charge was filed on Oliveo for possession of the gun at the airport in a secure area. Oliveo entered a plea in abeyance to the above-listed charge, which was an infraction. He paid a fine of $150 and was placed on probation for 12 months. During the Garrity interviews with both his department and Post, he admitted he placed the gun in his bag and then forgot to take it out at a later time. He admitted he did not have a concealed carry permit at the time. He said he only keeps the gun in a safe or his vehicle, in a safe in his vehicle or a safe in his home. His department sustained a personal conduct policy violation and issued him a verbal warning for the offense. He waived his right to a hearing before an ALJ. I'm sorry? And there's apparently a letter in the file from his chief or from the sheriff. Is that correct?
Take a moment and read that. Do you guys have that? I'm not seeing the letter. Oh, maybe it is in the house. Okay, let me see. It looks like some of you haven't got. Ms. V, do you want to read that letter, please? Some of us didn't have that.
So this is a letter from Matt Dumont, the chief deputy at the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office, dated September 25th, 2019, entitled Letter in Support of Sergeant. Members of the Post Council, I am writing on behalf of Mr. Oliveo. Sergeant Oliveo is an 11-year member of the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. He has a stellar record with the Sheriff's Office, serving in a number of critical positions throughout his career. He is currently assigned as the Classification Sergeant in the Corrections Bureau. Sergeant Oliveo is a good supervisor and a good person. He is level-headed, fair, and a person of great integrity. He works part-time for Delta Airlines. On May 8, 2019, while entering through the employee screening area, Delta Security located a handgun in his personal bag. At that point, Sergeant Oliveo recognized his critical mistake. He failed to remove the firearm from the bag before reporting for his part-time job that day. He fully cooperated with the security and personnel and police personnel during the investigation. Subsequently, he pled no contest to an infraction. As part of a plea in abeyance, he paid $150 in fines and forfeited the weapon. From the time he recognized his mistake, Sergeant Oliveo took full accountability. He cooperated with the investigations conducted by the Salt Lake City Police Department and our own Internal Affairs Unit. The Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office has taken administrative action to correct the behavior. Based on the way Sergeant Oliveo has conducted himself in light of this unfortunate incident, I am confident the issue is effectively resolved and will never be a problem again. Respectfully, Matt Dumont, Chief Deputy, Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. Any questions?
Good afternoon. I'd like to thank the members on the Post Council for allowing me this time to address you guys. As mentioned, I'm currently employed with Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office for 11 years. I made a mistake. The mistake was not removing the weapon from my bag. The weapon was registered to me. At the time, I did not have a concealed weapons permit. I apologize for the mistake, and I have since gotten my concealed weapons permit. I now stand before you just asking that we follow the recommendation of Sergeant Adams. I'd also like to acknowledge and express my appreciation to my chief who's here, Chief Dumont and Lieutenant Warnick, who have showed their support, and they're here for this hearing. I thank you for your time.
Any questions?
Did you retain your job at Delta?
I was suspended. Their claim was workplace violence, hostile work environment, and they asked me to resign or be terminated, so I resigned. I appealed it, and it didn't go in my favor.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Head.
I make a motion to support the recommendation of the letter of caution.
We have a motion to support the letter of caution.
Second.
We've got a second from Chief Swanson. Any further discussion? Discussion, Sheriff?
No. Are you a Leo? Are you a category or a corrections?
Category 2 is corrections, Sergeant.
I'm going to make a subsequent. I think there should be no action on this at all. And I'm going to can I open up discussion? I've been on Delta Airlines. I know pilots that carry firearms on a regular basis there. This is absolutely ridiculous that he was fined, that anything happened to this man. He's an honorary person. There shouldn't have been any action with him whatsoever. None.
So you want to make a substitute
motion? I'm going to make a substitute that no action.
I have a substitute motion from Sheriff Noel, no action. Do I have a second? I have a second from Chief Soap. Any further discussion? Hearing none, call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, thank you.
Next case is Courtney Pay. No response. Anyone representing Courtney Pay? No response. The sustained allegation against Courtney Pay, a dispatcher, is a BCI violation. The range is a letter of caution to 1.5 years. The guidelines baseline is 6 months, and the recommendation is a letter of caution. Courtney Pay was employed at Provo as a dispatcher. She resigned after 3 years of service. A mitigator in this case is that she did not disseminate any information. On September 23, 2016, Courtney Pay was investigated by her agency for a BCI violation. On September 28, 2016, during a Garrity interview, Pay admitted she accessed protected information 5 times between January 7th, 2016 and September 21st, 2016 to verify her registration or insurance status. She did not participate in the post-investigative process and failed to respond to a notice of agency action. An order of default was signed and was mailed to her. Any questions?
In 2016?
Yes, just some questions.
Is it just reported later?
It was through the auditors. The auditors found this, the state auditors, and when they audited Provo, found a couple violations that were reported to us. So it did happen in 2016.
And just confirming, it was her own information she was running?
Yes, her own information on her own vehicle.
Any further questions? Call for a motion.
Make a motion to accept.
Got a motion to accept from the Sheriff Pulsifer. Opposed guidelines. Do we have a second? Sheriff Curtis, a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, thank you.
Next case is Nicholas Riggs. Nicholas Riggs, are you present? Anyone present for Nicholas Riggs? The sustained allegation against Nicholas Riggs are communications fraud, driving under the influence of alcohol, and hit and run. These are Category D and E offenses. Is that right? No, I didn't say communication. Did I say it? Oh, did I say communication? No, communications fraud. Yeah, communications fraud, driving under the influence of alcohol, and hit and run. The range is 3 years suspension to revocation. Post recommends revocation. The baseline is revocation. Mr. Riggs was employed by the Unified Police Department for 13 years. He resigned in October 2017. This case resulted in a criminal plea of guilty to an amended reduced charge for attempted communications fraud, a Class A misdemeanor, He pled guilty to DUI, a Class B misdemeanor, and hit and run, and other traffic offenses were dismissed. In aggravation, there were multiple offenses, two previous post-council disciplines, a three-month suspension in 2012 for a BCI violation, and a letter of caution in 2017 for disorderly conduct. On August 9, 2017, Nicholas Riggs reported his credit card had been used on three occasions fraudulently. Riggs completed an affidavit of fraud with the credit union and filed a report with an outside law enforcement agency. The investigation determined the transactions were completed by Riggs's wife, and his wife had knowledge of the transactions. Were completed by Riggs's wife, and Riggs had knowledge of the transactions. Riggs was charged with communications fraud, a third-degree felony, but later pled guilty to an amended charge of attempted communications fraud, a Class A misdemeanor. On September 23, 2017, he was involved in a traffic accident, which caused property damage and failed to remain at the scene. His vehicle was immediately stopped by an officer, and it was determined that Riggs was driving under the influence of alcohol. His blood alcohol count was determined to be 0.203. He was charged with driving under the influence of alcohol, hit and run, and two additional traffic violations. He pled guilty to the charge of driving under the influence, and the other charges were dismissed. A subsequent post-investigation determined there was clear and convincing evidence to show Riggs had committed communications fraud, a third-degree felony, driving under the influence of alcohol, a Class B misdemeanor, and hit and run, a Class B misdemeanor. He declined to participate in the post-investigation. A post-investigation determined Riggs was investigated in post in 2012 and received a three-month suspension for BCI violation, and he was investigated in 2017 for disorderly conduct and received a letter of caution. He did not respond to the notice of agency action, and an order of default was entered. Are there any questions about Mr. Riggs or his prior cases? I have the ALJ's decision from the 2017 case, if that's relevant.
Any further?
I accept the recommendation vote for a revocation.
I have a motion from Major Wentworth to accept both recommendations, a second from John Crowley. Any further discussion? Hearing none, call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Case number 23 out of 25, Kirk Basil Smith. Mr. Smith, anyone representing Mr. Smith? The sustained allegation against Mr. Smith is assault, domestic violence in the presence of a child, and disorderly conduct. The range is 9 months to 3.5 years. The baseline is 2 years, and POST is recommending 3 years. Mr. Smith was employed by the Department of Corrections for 10 years until he was terminated in March of 2018. He pled guilty to an amended charge of disorderly conduct, one count of domestic violence in the presence of a child. In aggravation, there were multiple charges, multiple victims, and all victims were juveniles. On January 14, 2018, Kirk Smith was investigated for domestic violence-related assault and domestic violence in the presence of his four children. The local agency responded on the 14th, the day after the incident, for a welfare check. The investigation determined a verbal argument had taken place between Smith and his 18-year-old daughter. During the argument, Smith forced his daughter to the ground and slapped her in the face. The argument was witnessed or overheard by four other children in the residence. On January 16, 2018, criminal charges were filed on domestic violence-related assault and domestic violence in the presence of his four children. On August 23, 2018, Smith entered a plea of disorderly conduct and Class B misdemeanor and one count of domestic violence in the presence of a child. On January 17, 2018, he was placed on administrative leave. During a Garrity interview with his agency, Smith admitted to forcing his daughter to sit and slapped her face. On March 6, 2018, his employment was terminated. Post made multiple attempts to set up an interview with Smith, but Smith stated he was unable to come in due to work. On August 8, 2019, Mr. Smith waived his right to a hearing and submitted a waiver. Any questions?
For the record, we'll have Director Haddon is recusing himself. Any further questions for Ms. Vitti? Seeing none, I'll call for a motion.
Motion to accept.
Motion to accept. Christy Morin, do we have a second?
Second.
Second from Bruce Bailey. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Terry Thomas. Terry Thomas present. Present for Terry Thomas. See no response. The sustained allegation against Terry Thomas is voyeurism, which is a Category B offense. The range is 1.5 years to revocation. The baseline is 3 years, and Post recommends revocation. Mr. Thomas was unemployed at the time. He was an unemployed peace officer. He resigned in August 2017. He was with his department for 13 years. The criminal case resulted in a plea in July of 2018 in abeyance to voyeurism, and the second count was dismissed. In aggravation, the victim was a juvenile, and there were multiple counts. Between the approximate dates of April 1st, 2018 and May 8th, 2018, Terry Thomas installed a digital recording device in his 17-year-old stepdaughter's bedroom without her knowledge. Thomas checked on the device and learned it was not recording, so he reinstalled the memory card and put the device back in his stepdaughter's bedroom. Thomas was investigated by an outside agency that examined the memory card and discovered 77 videos, 23 of which contained footage of the juvenile's breasts, vagina, buttocks while she was in the act of changing or getting dressed. On June 6, 2018, the county attorney's office filed 2 counts of voyeurism against Thomas, and on July 23, 2018, Thomas took a plea in abeyance to 1 count of voyeurism. On May 1, 2019, during the post-Garrity interview, Thomas confirmed that he had installed the video recording device in his stepdaughter's bedroom without her knowledge to obtain proof that she was taking and sending nude photos of herself with her cell phone. Thomas stated that he was planning on showing his wife the proof so she would believe him and something could be done about the sexting. Thomas admitted he knew he was going to have to watch the videos to verify she was sexting prior to giving the video to his wife. Thomas failed to respond to a notice of agency action, and an order of default was entered against him.
Any questions?
No. Motion.
Revocation.
Revocation. We have a motion to accept.
Yeah.
And I got a second from
Nathan. Either one.
Okay.
I'm sure there's several.
Second from Sharon Cruz.
All ones.
Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, thank you.
And the last case on the calendar today, Shane Zillis. Am I saying that correctly? Zillis? Mr. Zillis, are you present? I hear no response. Anyone here on behalf of Mr. Zillis? The sustained allegation in this case is DUI, a Category D offense. The range is 3 months to 2.5 years. The baseline is 1 year, and Post is recommending 2 years. Mr. Zillis was employed by the Mantua. I'm not saying that correctly.
Manaway.
Ooh, that's bad. I've lived in this state for 30 years. I just want to say that for the record. Manaway. Manaway Police Department, almost 30 years. He served with his department for 15 years and was terminated. In the criminal case, he entered a plea of guilty to impaired driving. And the aggravator was that he was in a department-issued marked vehicle and in a department-issued uniform, including duty belt and duty weapon. On or about July 29, 2019, Shane Zillis was stopped for speeding and failure to maintain a single lane. During the traffic stop, the officer determined Zillis was unable to safely operate a motor vehicle and was arrested. Zillis was taken to a local hospital where he submitted to a chemical blood test. Preliminary blood test blood results showed Zillis was under the influence of Ambien and Benadryl. On February 8, 2019, the case was screened with the county attorney and the charge of DUI was filed in Zillis. On April 19, 2019, Zillis pleaded guilty to an amended charge of impaired driving under Utah Code 416A502.5, a Class B misdemeanor. During the Garrity interview with Post, Zillis admitted to taking Ambien and driving his Mantua department-issued patrol vehicle. He failed to respond to a notice of agency action and an order of default was entered against.
Any questions? Seeing none, I'll call for a motion.
Make a motion.
Got a motion to accept Post's recommendations to your suspension from Steve Winward. Do I have a second? Got a second from Sheriff Corey Pulsifer. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
And I want to point out that I'm aware that Mantua is north of Thule and Duchesne.
Let it be noted.
You know what? I don't even know.
Thule. Is that the Italian way to say it?
Yeah. We will now turn the time over to Director Stevenson for application processing.
Thank you, Chair, Council. The reason why I wanted to bring this to your attention is getting into the weeds, I admit, but I think it's important for you guys to understand our process for applications and processing them. Right now, we average annually over 1,000 applications that we process. We have four office technicians, and only we're limited resources to be able to handle that load. Now, it doesn't seem like a lot, when you're just going through paperwork, but when you're comparing other applications, you're contacting individuals because they haven't submitted the right amount of information, one application could take a week. And it really bogs down our process, this back and forth between the applicant and us. So what I've decided to do is instead of milking people through this process, we will return it one time. And if we don't get the information we need, we're going to reject the application. The reason why I feel compelled to let you know is it's going to be probably some of your applicants, and they're going to complain that I got to fill out another application. Well, yes. It's just getting to the point where it's taking too much time to kind of limp them through this application process. So if you have any concerns, please let me know. But I just, as a matter of efficiency and being able to manage the resources I have, I see no choice.
Official letter or something to
I can do that.
Agency has.
I will do that. I'll send it to the associations. But, well, yeah, I'll send it to you guys. Yeah. Any questions as to why? Very good. Thank you. I don't know what's next.
Meeting agenda. With Auditor General update.
Oh, yes, yes. If you remember, Council, you asked me to meet with the State Auditor, Dougal, regarding his office's audit and then our subsequent research of what his findings were. I took the entire presentation to Mr. Dougal, and I'll tell you, it was an awesome meeting. He was very open to what I had to say and what you wanted me to tell him. In fact, I was going to abbreviate the presentation that I presented to you. He wanted to see the whole thing and commended this body and the Post staff for putting in that kind of work and taking that audit as seriously as we did. And he had no objections or concerns as to our findings. Very complimentary. It was actually a dang good meeting. So I appreciate you supporting us on that.
And we have a proposed admin. Any questions on that piece with Auditor Dougal?
Was the press invited to that?
No, sir. No press. They're here now. So, yeah, it was a very good meeting. Yeah.
And then we have a proposed admin rule change from R-728-409 change.
Yes. Remember last meeting we had a discussion about sexting and inappropriate conduct while on duty. So in your packet, you can see we've added some language to our terminology and definition to sexual conduct. If you look at two, everything in red are the proposed changes to our rule. And the goal is to capture what we discussed last time, those areas that our current admin rule does not capture, such as well, you guys know, just doing stuff you should be doing on duty at taxpayer expense. So if you want me to read it, or do you guys have any questions? I'll just read it for the record. So the proposal under F2, sexual conduct, sending, transmitting, giving, exchanging, selling, soliciting, or posting through any means a sexual image as defined subsection 4 by a certified peace officer. And peace officer is that overarching description of all law enforcement categories within the state of Utah. A, while on duty, or while on duty if the intimate image depicts the certified peace officer in uniform or depicts any peace officer, symbols, insignia, or clothing, or to a certified peace officer or dispatcher while the recipient is on duty and the transmitting peace officer has reason to believe the recipient is on duty at the time of the transmission, or to an individual with whom the peace officer's relationship is based primarily upon the performance of the officer's law enforcement duties. Whether or not the intimate image depicts the certified peace officer in uniform, including confidential informants, witnesses, or victims. Remember, this was off of, I believe it was Sergeant Adams, who was responsible for getting information from Idaho. Idaho had this type of language within their statute, and they investigate these types of situations. Then three, sexual image means exposed human or female genitals or pubic area with less than an opaque covering. Two, a female breast with less than an opaque covering, or any portion of the female breast below the top of the areola, or the individual engaged in any sexually explicit conduct or visual depiction of nudity or partial nudity. Sexual conduct does not mean sending, transmitting, giving, or posting a sexual image for a legitimate law enforcement purpose. Any
questions?
Any questions?
Sure. By a certified peace officer, is that going to include dispatchers? Does that
yes, we do need to.
It needs to be added.
And B?
Peace officer or dispatcher, because in C, it says both.
Good guess. Okay, I'll add that.
You might want to say as defined in subsection 4 rather than as defined subsection 4.
In?
In.
Okay, thank you.
It's actually subsection 3.
Thank you. Anything else?
Director, are you going to bring up the database?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll do it right after this. Anything else? So I would, if you guys are good and okay, I would like a vote by statute. It's advice and consent from the Council on Administrative Development. So.
Motion to accept it with the changes we just discussed.
We have a motion to accept from
Christine Morin as with changes accepted.
Yeah, I have a second with Chief Swanson. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Very good. This is not on the agenda, but I think it's important for all law enforcement administrators to know that there is a national decertification index that is managed by IADLIST, which is the Post Directors Association. That is accessible to you guys. I'm surprised that we don't have more people that have asked requests to have access to this database. All that's required is you email me, and then I can give you permission and rights to view that database as you conduct your background investigations. Remember, that was one of the the points of concern in the State Auditor Dougal's report was that the information seemed a bit discombobulated, and just the feasibility and the cost of developing software that allowed us to kind of bring everything together was just going to be astronomical. So, again, by a way of getting that information out, we posted information on our website, walking background investigators step by step through the through a means of getting all the information they need. So we encourage everybody to contact POST when they're doing a background investigation. Chief.
I think it's 39 or 40. Yes.
We enter all action by this council. It's a good tool, good resource. I think right now, maybe 8 people I've given rights to. So it would behoove you to just send me an email and CC my assistant, Julie Gomez. She actually does the work around here. Yeah, you designate who you would like to have access, and I'll give them the rights to get that information. And they can always call us, and we can access it and tell them if they're on the decertification index. But just by calling us, they're going to find out that we had an investigation against them.
Director, what's the name of the database?
National Decertification Index.
Okay. Any further questions? With that, we'll go ahead and set our next scheduled meeting.
I have another.
Do you have another?
Yeah,
I see it on here.
What is there anything another thing on the agenda? No? Yes, at 1500. But I wanted to, there's one more thing I wanted to bring up that's not on the agenda, and it's our EVO track and some of the challenges we've had in managing this it's not a track. Is it a course? Yeah, course, because if it's a track, then NASCAR can get rights to it, I guess. I don't know. There's been a lot of frustration as to the availability of this course. And getting officers in there certified. I'm preaching to the choir. Driving is the highest liability area of law enforcement. And I understand people need to get trained. The thing is maxed to the hilt. This year, the course was down 44 days for maintenance. We've added a couple of sessions, and basic training takes precedent. And so departments have been kicked off or, at least rescheduled. But the concern I'm receiving is that just there's no availability. I entertain the possibility of putting a fee to the scheduling of that track or that course, but just to hold people accountable, because some departments are scheduling it and not using the range. And in turn, that puts a cramp in what we're trying to accomplish. So I just want you to understand that we're very cognizant of that, and we're working on a remedy, and that one of the proposals, well, what we decided to do is put the scheduling online. So instead of contacting us and Jamie Garn, you will see it right online, who has the range and how many days, and, basically it's going to be something that's going to self-manage this process. Any type of fine or fee has to be approved by the legislature. And,
the legislature just get another $2.5 million and build one up north?
We do need a new range. That's about to the tune of $20 million. Ooh. Yeah, that's a lot of money.
How about rather than a fee, if they're not using it and they fail to report it, that you give them, you pull them off the track after 2-3 times or whatever we come up
with?
Yep,
we could do that. I really think putting the schedule on line is going to correct a lot of these problems. But I'm also concerned about the smaller agencies getting time, and that's something we're going to have to just kind of track and make adjustments as we go. But I wanted to make you aware of the strain that we have on this range. It is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Forget it. Unless you sent us a request or first of the year, you're probably not going to get on any of those days. Fridays, nobody wants to use them. Some departments here and there will use it. And then the weekends, you know, some of those weekends are open as well. In fact, one department's taken Sundays. So that range is really, really used. November 1. And an email from me will be sent out to all the administrators, letting them know of the new process. Any questions about EVO range? Because I'm sure your peers are going to say, what the heck is POST doing? In fact, I met with Chief Marino yesterday about this because of some of his frustration. I know Chief Childs from Centerville has expressed some concern about the lack of time on the range. So please let them know that we're very cognizant of it, and we're trying to find a remedy. Anything else? Okay. Yes. Schedule a meeting.
Next quarterly meeting.
Typically, we go in December. We have gone into the first couple weeks of January, if December is not good. But I'll throw out a date, about the 4th December. That way we get before the rush.
On the 5th. And then our social media and stuff. Yeah. 5th. That'll work.
The 4th?
Right, Linda?
Yeah.
Sorry, Christian, on the 5th.
What are we having? So we had
some. So we've got other search and risk reimbursement with the Division of Emergency Management that we like to sit on also. It's on the 5th, so that actually worked for those of us that travel.
So you're saying the 4th just wants 6 days vacation.
It just means I'll be up here for 3 days.
Okay. So he's good with it.
So the 4th.
The 4th. December 4th?
I was going to say December. You should be in San Jose, but not here.
That's true.
Agreed. But that's you guys. That's money. Yes, 10 o'clock here, right?
Perfect.
Okay. December 4th, 10 o'clock, 2019, here at POST.
We have a motion to adjourn. We have a motion from Sheriff Curtis. We have a second from John Crowley. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.